Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. Today's interesting show will be on veterans' health, which is, you know, a whole population that deserves our attention, really. And we have a great guest with us. Get to him in just a moment. As always, I'd like to recognize our excellent crew, Maddie Levine-Wolf, Aaron Collins, DeAndre Howard, and Sheridan Nygaard, and also Matthew Campbell. All do a variety of different things, but it centers around research, marketing, and also production. Without them, Health Chatter would not be as successful as it is. So you guys are dear colleagues, and thank you so much. We also have Dr. Barry Baines, who couldn't be with us today, but he's our medical advisor, often is on our shows to provide a little bit of a medical perspective. And then, of course, there's Clarence Jones. We have a lot of fun doing these shows. We like to engage in conversations around health, and hopefully it's interesting for you, the listening audience. Human Partnership is our sponsor, HUEMAN Partnership. Great community health organization that does very, very innovative things out in the community to help a variety of different people with health-related issues from a prevention standpoint and intervention. Check them out at humanpartnership.org. Check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. You can see all the background information that we have for our shows. If you have questions, we check out the website every once in a while to get back to you on questions that you may have. So we hope you enjoy Health Chatter and today's show. Today's show is with Dr. Stephen Fu from Veterans Health Administration. Dr. Fu, Stephen, I hope that's okay.
Yes.
Is interested in smoking cessation, tobacco-related disparities. His research is focused on identifying best practices for improving the delivery and utilization of tobacco dependence treatments among diverse populations. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Minnesota and director of the VA Center for Care Delivery and Outcomes Research, graduate of Jefferson Medical College and the University of Pennsylvania. It's really wonderful having you. It's actually, I'm really hoping to get some really insights into VA care. And I'm going to pass it over to my great colleague, Clarence Jones.
All right. Thank you, Stan. I want to just, affirm the fact that we're very glad to have you, Dr. Fu. It's been interesting because you've been on our radar screen for a while. Stan has said that we wanted to learn more about veterans' health. He's asked me, did I know anybody? And I remember the fact that you and I were on a University of Minnesota board, I think it's CCSI. I used to be intrigued by listening to what you were doing with the VA. And I know that you are working with Mayo and some other organizations. And so what I thought we would like to do is just talk a little bit about who you are and about your work at the VA. You start off like that.
That sounds great. Thanks, Stanton. Thanks, Clarence. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be with you here all this morning. A little bit about myself. I'm a primary care physician at the Minneapolis VA. I am also a researcher. I am what they call a health systems researcher. So we study and try to figure out what are the best practices for improving the delivery of evidence-based care, or care that we know are proven to be effective, and how do we get those treatments to the patients who need them. And we have here at the Minneapolis VA a Center for Care Delivery and Outcomes Research, which is the Health Systems Research Center of Innovation. And we have a number of investigators, over 30 investigators, and I am fortunate to have been the director for nearly 12 years now for that center.
So you, So, you know, the thing for me in terms of listening or being inquisitive, I know that we have a lot of veterans in our community. And you know, and what are some of the issues that the VA helped them with? I mean, that's one of the things is like, you know, veterans come to you. What are some of the primary issues that they are facing?
Sure. Yeah. So there are a number of what I would describe as common conditions. So as a primary care doctor, I take care of adult veterans, and a lot of the conditions are what any old primary care doctor would see. Things like high blood pressure, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. But I think what's I guess a little bit, I'm not sure if it's unique, but is that a lot of veterans have a history of what we would describe as military toxic exposures. And so some of those chronic conditions are related to those toxic exposures. So, for example, some of the patients we see from the Vietnam War era were exposed to Agent Orange, and they have high blood pressure or diabetes. And those are Agent Orange connected conditions.
Sure.
So we would see a higher prevalence of diabetes and high blood pressure among veterans. So those common conditions we see, but they're more prevalent, and they run together. So a lot of the veterans have what we would describe as complex chronic conditions. So they have multiple conditions.
Right.
So one of the nice things about being a primary care doctor at the VA is that we actually get more time to spend with our veterans because a lot of them have complex conditions where other health systems don't get to spend as much time with their patients. So
Sure.
I mean, we're busy, but I will say that is a very nice thing in terms of how the VA structured its care is to allow us the time. And then the other thing, in terms of helping us improve the way we deliver our care, VA primary care has implemented what's called PACT teams or patient-aligned care teams. Another name for that is the patient-centered medical home. And what that is that we take a team-based approach to the care of our veterans in primary care. And so it's an interdisciplinary team that can consist of a primary care provider like myself, a nurse care manager, an RN nurse care manager. We then have nursing assistants, medical support assistants, and then also we have embedded clinical psychologists in case we need to do primary care mental health integration or connect folks to VA mental health care. We also have alongside with us co-located pharmacists, which is very helpful to help us with chronic disease management. So and then of course social work to connect veterans to social services if needed. So that's a very nice setup in that we have a lot of resources, and that as a primary care provider, I'm very fortunate that I have access to those services. So if I have a veteran who has kind of different needs, I know who I can go to connect them to appropriate services.
You know what's interesting? I'm really glad that we're having this conversation because I think, as you probably have stated, is that many times veterans have a higher rate of chronic illnesses and diseases than other people, and sometimes it's helpful for families to understand that. You know what I mean? Because part of what we know is that there are a lot of things that are happening in veterans, and so the more we can make our community aware of these issues. Hopefully it just makes the life more peaceful for them, because they've already done a great service, in terms of protection. And so that's one of the reasons why we wanted to bring this out so that we can talk about this, because like I said, I was always intrigued when you would talk about what was happening with veterans and things like that. And I always thought it was important to have a just very candid conversation about the issues that they might be confronted with, and so that our communities could know more. Sam, you had a question?
I'm trying to put on a thinking cap from a public perspective. It's kind of like, okay, what distinguishes the key thing that distinguishes access to care in a VA? So for instance, you kind of think that, oh, these are combat soldiers that are coming back from serving in combat from in an acute situation. On the other hand, I think, and clarify if I'm wrong, where yes, we could be dealing with them, but we'll be dealing with them ongoing. Okay, they have access to the care for theoretically the rest of their life, I assume. Maybe you can clarify that. But not everybody is comes from combat. In other words, you can serve, but not serve in that type of capacity. So, can you make a distinction for us between the type of care that you give for what I would maybe call acute, given somebody's coming back from combat and they might be injured or whatever, versus more chronic and ongoing care?
Yeah, I think so. What I would just say is maybe what I would describe it is, so when they're in the military, they're getting their health care from DHA or the Defense Health Agency.
Right, okay.
Then when they're when a vet, when a military service member is discharged, then they can become eligible for VA care. I actually am not too familiar with actually what are the eligibility rules. I just see them when, I see all those veterans who are eligible for care. But what I do know is that I think there are roughly approximately 18 million veterans of the armed services, and the VA serves about 9 million veterans. Here in Minneapolis, we saw over 100,000 unique veterans in
Wow,
our healthcare
wow.
system. And what when I guess a military service member is being discharged from us, back to civilian life, as part of that process, they're informed about their VA eligibility benefits and how to connect with the VA. And we also I know that we're pretty proactive, particularly when I think the veterans were returning from the Gulf War. We had social workers who were doing direct outreach to veterans who were soon discharged and getting them in and getting them connected to. We had a what we call a post-deployment clinic that that was set up. I think it's still active. And then initially the post-deployment clinic is taking care of them. And then once they've been around for a little while, then they get actually transferred, some of them over into our regular primary care clinic. Is something that I remember happening. So, because there has to be there's a number of things that were being checked out. For example, veterans were being screened for traumatic brain injury. They were being screened for all sorts of conditions in the post-deployment clinic, and then being connected to the appropriate resource depending upon the results of that screening. But once a veteran, we have a different perspective in the VA. We're responsible for their entire life. When they come into our system, they're ours, forever. For their entire life, and we have electronic medical record. We have access to the Department of Defense electronic medical records, so we can kind of see everything. And so that's also another really cool thing about the VA is you could be here in Minneapolis and then go to Hawaii and. If you go to a VA in Hawaii, they see what's the medical records that are held in Minneapolis. So, and so we can kind of, promote that continuity of care and have that information. And so, for a veteran, they can rest assured that they can go anywhere in the country, any VA in the country, and we have their entire medical record in the VA that we can access and maintain that continuity of care.
Yeah,
So, I think that's incredible. Go ahead, Clarence.
Dr. Who, I think the thing with us, for me is that, I love the idea about, having continuation of care. I think a lot of do you have a lot of veterans that don't necessarily access the VA? I mean, because I think when we started talking about some of the things, like homelessness and stuff like that, they talk about a lot of them being veterans, and I think that part of what our goal is here in this program is to let people know that the services are available.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
I know, and one of the things for me is that I know that many times we have conversations where we say, oh, yeah, we know, but then we really don't know how to access it, or you know what I mean? Or families don't know how to access it, or families will say, like, well, you know, I know he's a veteran, but you know, they're trying to do it on their own. And I think that it's important to understand that the VA is interested in trying to help those families.
Absolutely, yes. And the VA, we do a variety of outreach events to try and connect with veterans and make them aware of our services and resources available. One great resource that's out there is what's called the County Veteran Service Officer. Every county has one, and a veteran can call up their County Veteran Service Officer and you just Google, whatever county, like Hennepin County Veteran Service Officer, and a phone number and a name will show up, and you can contact them. And they are awesome because they are a wealth of information. Also, our veteran service organizations, they're very helpful. Disabled American Veterans, American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and there's even more than that. But trying to just get the word out and just letting veterans know that, hey, the VA's here. The VA here in Minnesota is a great VA. In fact, we're a 5-star quality hospital. Actually, our VA was actually recognized by the government as being, I think, the best hospital in Minnesota, not just VA hospital, but of all hospitals. That's something that we were able to toot our horn about to get that recognition. So we're pleased with that.
So let me, that's great. I mean, I think that this is incredible service. One thing that's near and dear to Clarence and in my heart is prevention and health promotion. Okay, so obviously this is the hospital. Or maybe I assume there's some kind of a clinic that's associated with the hospital for, primary care. So I'm curious what kind of prevention and health promotion programs or activities you promote for patients.
Yeah, actually, this is a topic near and dear to my heart. I'm a tobacco use cessation. That's kind of one of my passions. And so, how's that phrase go? Oh, I can't remember anymore. But prevention, if you can prevent,
An ounce of prevention
there we go. An ounce
is
of
worth a
prevention.
pound of cure.
There we go. An ounce of
There you
prevention
go.
is worth a pound of cure. Thank you for that. And so, if I can help someone quit smoking, I can dramatically reduce the risk of lung cancer in the future. I'm having pretty immediate, within a year effect of, for example, if you quit smoking, the risk of a heart attack decreases by 50% within 1 year of quitting smoking. So prevention is very important. And in the VA, there is a national program office called the National Center for Prevention. I actually got a longer name for that, but it's just easier to call it NCP or National Center for Prevention. And then they coordinate health promotion activities across the VA. Every VA has what's called a health promotion disease prevention coordinator. And they work closely with primary care and mental health. There's also someone called a health behavior coordinator. For example, they help us with our tobacco cessation activities. They help us with influenza vaccine drives. We actually, for example, we did a Great American Smokeout. We had a lung cancer screening awareness. I don't know if any of you were at the state fair. You might have seen these lungs that were at the state fair. And so we were able to, when we had our lung cancer screening awareness event not too long ago, we got those lungs and brought them and put them into the atrium of our hospital. And so we do certain events like that. And then training and working with primary care and the PAC teams on the healthy living messages. So healthy living is eating healthy, reducing stress, reducing alcohol, stopping tobacco. For those folks, we also have I guess what I would describe a state-of-the-art evidence-based MOVE program. The MOVE program is to help individuals be more active, to help them lose weight, to help them eat better. And then through the MOVE program, or working closely with the MOVE program, We can deliver evidence-based treatment options to help patients lose weight if needed. There are medications that are available. Some of them are kind of hitting the news right now, like medications like semaglutide. Those are available. We can prescribe them from the VA. And then, you know, some individuals, if they want, they can get surgery to help them lose weight. There's some select criteria to determine who's an appropriate candidate for surgery. But my understanding is that the chair of the Department of Surgery at the University of Minnesota actually comes to the VA regularly and operates. And he's I think he's an expert in bariatric surgery. So we have state-of-the-art surgeons who are coming to the VA to do these kinds of operations. And they're here because they believe in the mission. They want to contribute and give back to our veterans.
So Dr.
Wow.
Fu,
that's great.
Dr. Fu, I know that you're a researcher. You mentioned that, and you mentioned that tobacco is you know, one of your interests. What other kind of research is being done at the VA?
I guess I want to focus a little bit more of what's being done here in the Minneapolis VA. I can speak to that a little better, but what we do in Minneapolis is also being done elsewhere. But it gives you a good sense of the kind of research that we're interested in. So in CCDOR, or Center for Care Delivery and Outcomes Research, we have three main impact goal areas. So the first one is post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. We have folks who are doing research in trying to improve trauma recovery. That also includes traumatic brain injury. And for example, this is a very robust group of investigators who have been doing really state-of-the-art research in this area for decades. And we now have what I would describe as evidence-based treatments to help people with PTSD. These are actually cures. They can actually have people, you know, get better. And it's a combination of psychotherapy and medications. So an evidence-based psychotherapy or talk therapy, one example is something called prolonged exposure therapy. Another is cognitive processing therapy. So our researchers here are figuring out how to, deliver those treatments or organize the delivery of those treatments in VA care. And we've been working with national program partners over the National Center for PTSD, actually to help PTSD treatment clinics across VA improve the delivery through something called implementation science, where we help implement or help health systems or clinics in the VA implement the delivery of these evidence-based treatments for PTSD. And we've been quite successful. We now, in our PTSD treatments, when before we were starting to do this work, more than half were not delivering the evidence-based treatments. And then through the efforts over the years, less than 13% are low reach. In other words, the vast majority of these clinics are delivering these evidence-based treatments and make it available. And now we're trying to figure out how to expand that. For example, working with, I mentioned earlier that we have something called primary care mental health integrations, and we also have embedded clinical psychologists. So sometimes veterans are not seen in the PTSD treatment clinics, but they're seen in primary care. And we're trying to figure out, well, how do we deliver these evidence-based treatments into our primary care mental health integration teams and do it effectively? And so that's some of the work that we do. Chronic pain is an important area. Veterans are more likely to have chronic pain, and we're doing work particularly to try and identify effective non-drug or non-pharmacologic treatments for chronic pain. We recently, one of our investigators, Dr. Burgess, and her team published the results of the LAMP trial, which was really a study that tested telehealth-delivered mindfulness-based interventions for chronic pain. And they found that a app-based delivery of it, as well as a group app-based delivery of it through telehealth, was effective. And so it's really one of the first trials showing that a non-drug treatment is effective for helping veterans with chronic pain. And so now they're trying to figure out how to further scale and deliver that up, particularly to rural populations. So that's an important area of work that we're doing. And then prevention in chronic disease. So we're doing great work in tobacco cessation, lung cancer screening. The Minneapolis VA has actually been one of the leads for the VA when we were doing the demonstration project to help roll out lung cancer screening. We were also been the lead to help provide technical support to help other VAs adopt lung cancer screening in their programs. And of course, I'm the tobacco cessation guy, so I'm trying to work with these lung cancer screening programs to help integrate comprehensive tobacco cessation treatment into lung cancer screening. Because lung cancer screening is important. It's I think the eligibility criteria for people who have smoked, who are aged 55 to 80. And if you're currently smoking cigarettes, you're eligible. You're most likely eligible for lung cancer screening. And if you've quit smoking in the past 15 years and have what's called a 20-pack year history, you're also eligible for lung cancer screening. So that would be something to talk with your primary care providers, either at the VA or wherever you're at, to get lung cancer screening. We've also done a history of great work in colorectal cancer screening and in women's health. It's an important area, cervical cancer screening. And the FDA recently approved what's called, to do the traditional mode of screening for cervical cancer screening is something called a pap smear. But now we can do what's in-clinic collection of something called HPV. So that can be administered in the clinic. So that's a new procedure that's is less invasive and can be done in the women's health clinic. And so that's something that is being, I guess, figured out how to go about doing that. And so that's because it's pretty new. But we're doing research in that area to try and figure out how to develop patient education materials to help people understand what that procedure is like and how to work with clinics to implement that in the VA.
That's amazing stuff. So I have a couple questions. So let's say I'm a veteran, okay, for whatever, and is my family, can they also be part of the VA medical system, or is it just the veteran themselves?
Yeah, I think it's just the veteran themselves.
Okay.
I have heard of situ. I don't know the answer to this one, but I don't know what. I think it's mainly just the veteran themselves.
Okay. So that makes sense.
There may be some exceptions, but I don't know what those are.
Yeah. Another thing that I remember distinctly. My father, when he was a veteran, and when he passed away, he was not buried at a national cemetery. He was buried at a Jewish cemetery here in Minneapolis. And I remember being really, really struck by the care, actually. Even in that kind of a situation where they, on a gravestone, they're putting a marker on a gravestone, even though you're not, it's not like the official one like at a cemetery, and also they hand you a flag. Mm-hmm. So there, you don't have to be intimately connected, but you're still recognized in those final days. Okay, so here's a couple of other. Do you connect with other health plans as far as prevention efforts are concerned? Do you coordinate, like with like in the state of Minnesota, like with Health Partners or with Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever? Because they do a lot of prevention oriented activities too. So do you ever coordinate activities with them?
Yeah, so sometimes we will send veterans into the community to get care, mm-hmm. And there's a whole, I guess, unit that's responsible for coordinating that. So for example, I recently sent a patient to get a stress test in the community, and then I'll get that results back from the community. So we're working together to coordinate care.
Right.
I would say that Yeah, so the VA is a, you know, it's a full service hospital. So we'll either provide the care ourselves or coordinate for the delivery of the care, but with providers in the community.
Got it, got it. So let me you just said you're full service. Let me ask you something. If there's like a particular procedure that a veteran needs, are particular hospitals noted for particular things that you might want to send them to a different VA hospital or not? I mean, there's no reason for it because you're so full service.
Well, for example, liver transplantations
Yeah, okay.
by some dedicated medical centers. And so we will, for example, if we have a veteran who needs a liver transplant, I think they go to Pittsburgh,
Okay.
because that's a really strong program. And so so it kind of depends on the VA has different types of medical centers which have different expertise. And so we can, so we work closely. We do all the, I guess, pre-workup, and then we help give them plane tickets and hotel,
Yeah.
and then they make their way over there for the operation, and then they get transferred back to us. Then we handle the our liver clinic. We'll handle the post care because whenever you get a transplant, you have to worry about organ rejection, so they have to get
Yeah,
these
yeah.
modulator agents to prevent that organ rejection. So that's That care is done here with by our liver specialist, but the surgery is done over in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So, Dr. Fu, let me ask this question. We talked a lot about health but what other kind of benefits do veterans get, besides the VA hospital that also impacts their health? Because I'm thinking about things like housing and I'm thinking, about jobs and stuff like that. Is that something also that the VA is and again, I know that you are, we talk more about the health aspect of it, but there are other things that veterans have access to that also enhances their health.
So, for example, that's one of the nice things about working here at the VA is we have an excellent social work department. So if I have a veteran who may have some social service needs, I can connect into our social workers, and they so if there's a veteran who's experiencing homeless or risk for homeless, the social worker, we my understanding is we have vouchers. And so I you know or we yeah so like there's vouchers for housing that can be given to veterans, and I my understanding is that we're making some really great strides to reducing veterans homelessness here in Minnesota. Can't remember exactly what the news story was, but I remember someone our director talking about that. We've really made some great strides in terms of reducing homelessness here in Minnesota. Similarly, we have a vocational work program, and they do vocational educational training to help veterans find a job. I've had a number of my veterans, patients of mine, who participate in that program, and it helps them to get a job. So it's a vocational training. Or let's say, for example, veterans are experiencing food insecurity. We did a survey back in like 2012, 2013 of veterans who are returning from the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and we found that over 1 in 4 veterans were experiencing food insecurity, and our social services will provide resources to help connect them to programs. The Minneapolis VA, we do a regular food pantry to help veterans with food insecurity. So those are some of the benefits besides just delivering health care, because addressing some of those social determinants of health is very important, because not just physical health but mental health. Having a job is
Right.
is important for actually suicide prevention, which is the number one concern of the VA, which just trying to make things better to reduce the rate of suicide in veterans.
Yeah. So let me ask another question real quick.
Yep.
How did you pivot during COVID?
How did we pivot during
How did you
COVID?
pivot during
That's
COVID?
a
Okay. Great question. Yeah, especially
Yeah.
given all the mental health issues associated,
Yeah, no, that was a real challenge. We pivoted. We set up someone called an ARC, an acute respiratory clinic, on the first floor to screen patients who were having respiratory symptoms. But we were open in business. We were open for business. I mean, you know, and so I mean, for a little while, things were moved to telehealth. You know, but you know, it pretty. You know, I can't remember the exact timing, but you know, when we were able to, we were bringing patients back pretty quickly. You know, we just had to put the masking policies and have kind of that triage system that as people were walking in, if anybody was having respiratory symptoms, they got directed first to the acute respiratory clinic to get that evaluated and make sure that, you know, they weren't having COVID. And then they could get in to the VA. So it was kind of figuring out a, you know, a triage system really to kind of handle that situation.
How did so tell me, was did he, telehealth play a part during this period? I mean, is it something? I mean, you know, because at that time a lot of people couldn't get to the doctor. I mean, so that, you know, was that something that was increased during that time?
Telehealth was increased dramatically, the use of telehealth, and we're still you know, it's still an important modality by which we can deliver care. So we deliver in-person care, we do deliver telehealth care. You know, we have something called VA Video Connect by which we can do televideo or telehealth care. We can do we sometimes have veteran groups where we have group sessions on telehealth. For example, some of the smoking cessation groups that we do is done on telehealth. We also have an in-person group as well. And mental health care is done both ways as well. There's telehealth mental health care as well as in-person care. So it's particularly helpful for veterans who have to travel a long distance, but need to get care. And so we can deliver that care, and, you know, kind of save them that drive, so to speak, you know, which is helpful.
You know, I've got a personal trainer that I work with, and he's a veteran. And I remember talking to Tim during open enrollment on the other side of this equation. Okay, you know, where you know, people like Clarence and I, or frankly, just about everybody on a yearly basis. You know, oh God, you got to go through this whole assessment of determining which health plan you're going to sign up for, and whether you have to change or whatever. Okay, Tim said to me, it was really interesting when we were just chatting about that as I was lifting weights and sweating to death. He said to me, "I never worry about that." You know, so you know, which is really interesting. You know, so if you're a veteran and you know you're accessing, you know, care through the veterans, through the VA, you have it. It's
Correct.
kind of,
Yeah. You're a veteran, you're signed up for VA care, and you're eligible to sign up for VA care, you know,
for the rest of your life,
yeah,
right?
24/7 full service
Right. So,
for the
you know,
rest of your
to
life.
a certain extent, for veterans, it's kind of like a single payer. We don't have to worry about it. We go in, we get the care we need. So it's an interesting model,
Yeah.
actually, to, you know, to look at.
Yeah, and the VA is the largest integrated healthcare system in the country, if not the world.
For the world, yeah.
you know, we have, you know, I think around 170 VA medical centers. We have over 1,000 clinics, and we're everywhere. You know, I mean, you know, we're a lot of places. Maybe not everywhere, but we have a pretty broad reach across the country.
And you never have to deal with things like, correct me if I'm wrong, like prior authorization for procedures or any of that, or do you?
Not really. I mean, we do have to have, we there are criteria, but
Right.
we don't have to deal with like the health insurance.
Right, exactly,
Your
right.
prior authorization, can so and so do get X? We would just, as a primary care provider, we just refer them to the specialist, and the specialist
Yeah,
will figure that
interesting.
they'll make the assessment and you know, and provide the care as indicated.
Right. Yeah, Clarence.
Yeah, so I heard you mention the term sign up a couple different times. And there are some families. How does a veteran sign up? I know that people talk about it, but there might be some families that out there might need to assist or help them to sign up. What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you just go to any main VA website, there's usually a phone number there that a veteran could call for information about how to sign up. And if that doesn't work, just walk into the Minneapolis VA or walk into a VA and talk to someone at the front desk. We have some great customer service, and you just ask the question, how do I sign up? Or if you ask, we have here, for example, volunteers who are working, they wear these red vests. They know all the questions, you know, they know the answers or where to get the answers, but all sorts of questions. If you ask them, where did I go to apply and sign up? They'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Is it ever too late for a veteran to get care at a VA? In other words, if, you know, like, frankly, you know, I'll use my dad as an illustration. I don't think he ever took advantage of VA, although he could have, I guess. Is it so? Is there like a statute of limitations? You know,
there's no statute of limitations. I mean, there are certain eligibility criteria, but if the veteran meets those eligibility criteria, it doesn't matter how old they are when they come to the VA. In fact, I see a number of patients who will come to the VA in their 70s or 80s, you know, for many reasons. But one of them, for example, would be because they moved back to Minnesota to be with their children, and they need to find a new doctor. And rather, you know, even though they might have health insurance, they say, oh, I might as well go check out the VA.
So, gotcha. Okay. So it's never too late.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. That's really good. Yeah. I mean, really, really good. I'm impressed.
I'm really excited and glad that, you know, we have had the opportunity to talk with you and to learn more about the VA system and what you're doing. And, you know, for me, it was the idea that, you know, inviting families who may really need the services mm-hmm. to be able to access the services. I mean, because so many times information is given out, and unless you know, unless the right person gets it, then things don't happen. And I know that in many of our communities, you know, because I come from a community perspective, many people in our community need to understand more about how to access and to work, you know, in terms of making their family member healthier, but also it also makes the community healthier. And so I think the things that we're talking about today are just very, very important. Because I didn't know, you know, like I said, Dr. Fu, when I would hear you talk about it, you and others, I'm like, okay. So what else can we, you know, what else can we learn, do, or how can we present this information to the community? So I'm really glad that you and your colleagues spent the time to meet with us.
Yeah, I just want to comment, you know, families are very important, and the VA is, we have some excellent caregiver support programs, and we're also doing research to try and figure out better ways of involving family and caregivers to help their loved ones, to help their veterans. So, for example, in PTSD treatment, we have a research study in which we're involving family members to, you know, because those treatments, veterans sometimes can drop out of treatment, but it takes a village, right? So involving family members to go through treatment and be supportive is something that can be very helpful. I'm doing a study right now, which we are training support persons and how to be a supportive person to help their veteran when the veteran's ready to engage in VA tobacco cessation services. And we educate both the family member and the veteran about the variety of tobacco cessation services that are available in the VA. So that's an important piece that the VA wants to grow in. And we think it's very vital.
You know, I'll tell you, this has been really enlightening. It really has. I greatly appreciate your insights on this. And what really struck me is how full service oriented the VA is. It's like from prevention, which, you know, is near and dear to our hearts for sure. And then the intervention, if obviously needed, and then disease management. And it's over the lifespan, I mean, you know, of a veteran. It's great care. It's around the country. It's probably, you know, like you said, you know, perhaps the best integrated health system, perhaps in the world. And wow, I really thank you. First of all, I thank you for the delivery of care and the prevention that you focus on, which is wonderful. In many ways, I wish I had known you sooner in my career, but we know each other now.
Yes.
So thank you so much for being on Health Chatter. Last thoughts, Clarence.
I like I said a little bit earlier, I'm very glad that we had the opportunity to learn more. And hopefully people that might need this information will be turning in or tuning in and, you know, and utilizing it, you know, because I think that the more support we can get to make our community healthier, the better. And so we know that this is a way for us to do that. And so thank you again.
Thank you. My pleasure being with you all this morning.
It's been really, really great. For our listening audience, we've got great shows coming up. Our next show that we'll be recording will be on the opioid crisis, which is also, it's an issue, and hopefully we'll be able to chat about that. So in the meantime, all of you out there in Health Chatterland, keep health chatting away.